And you're welcome back to the programme. 28 minutes to the hour is the time. And at this hour on a Monday evening, we talk careers. I'm joined on the line, as usual, by Liam Horan. Liam, good evening to you.
Good evening, Eden.
And thank you very much indeed for joining us. Let us start with an email from HH. My son is in fifth year in secondary school. What can he do now to advance his career so that he might be a step or two ahead of his peers when he leaves school or college?
Well, I suppose there's two things. He can do things that will stand to him down the line, but maybe more importantly, he can document things he's already doing in a certain way that will stand to him down the line, if you know what I mean. So, for example, you know, what are his hobbies, his interests, his involvement community-wise? What does he, you know, what traits and attributes is he showing now that may well, you know, say stuff about him when the time comes? So I kind of approach it from both ends. First of all, if he's involved in sport, he should be documenting his involvement, not just in terms in his CV, he should be documenting his involvement, not just in terms of what he won, but what he learned, what values he learned in sport, teamwork, fair play, whatever he feels that, you know, he learned in sport. And he should be getting that, you know, down on paper. He should first of all have a CV right now that he's amending as he goes along. It's not a good idea to wait until a certain point to do a CV. He should create his own CV right now if he hasn't already done so, and start putting in stuff now, because you'll be amazed what you'll forget a little bit later on. And in the case of a school-going person, they often forget the value, they often even forget the fact that they did debates, quizzes, you know, young scientist exhibition or variations of same. All of these things say a lot about somebody, but if you don't document them now and, you know, write a few lines about them, you may well not get the value out of that down the line. If he's involved in any way in fundraising for any charities, if he volunteers for a charity, you know, if he does anything like that, that's all very useful. And the other one, of course, is if he's working part-time or during the summers somewhere, he should be documenting that as well, getting written references along the way, watching out for training opportunities. It's not uncommon for people working part-time or at weekends or during the summer to be allowed to go on a training course in a company. Anywhere he can accumulate anything that shows from an early age he was keen about his career and doing things to stretch himself. And it may appear a very tenuous connection between the sales course, the one-day sales course you do as part of your part-time work, to being maybe a legal eagle down the line. But the traits of committing yourself to improvement and to learning, they're transferable right throughout your career. So there are certain things that young fella can do right now. And it's a good question for a parent to be asking, and probably a better question if it came from the individual themselves. So I hope that it's not a case of the parent pushing them too much. There must be a certain amount of lead coming from the young person as well.
Well, I have to say, Liam, when I saw this coming into us towards the end of last week, I got my shackles up, I have to say. Mm-hmm. And I was saying to myself, really, is this parent for real in sending in this particular inquiry in relation to a son who's in fifth year in secondary school, who probably has enough pressures than most of us? And does he really need to be a son having foisted on him this type of thing by a parent, I have to say?
The tennis parent, perhaps.
Yeah.
I think that that's probably part of the problem, is we don't know if this son is born lazy or if this son is driven very, very highly, you know what I mean? It may well be this is an exasperated parent saying my son isn't doing anything of note, or it may be a pushy parent who doesn't realise, as you say, the pressure that the young person is already under. And I think that anybody listening, taking the advice on board, needs to understand that part of it. If your son or daughter is having a good go at it, and, you know, it's easy to be critical of children or of teenagers and say they're not doing enough, but we all in school, our parents all thought we could do more. So you need to temper your judgment of it. But if you feel they're having a good go at it, I would say there's merit in what you say, not to over-push them. But there are little things they can do. I mean, for example, when I do training courses with people, I regularly ask the group, do you have any references, written references to date? And loads of people have no references kept at all. So it's not a bad bit of advice if they are doing, we'll say, some summer work, just to get that reference and put it in the bag and have it for again. But I wouldn't like anything we would say here to be used by this parent to justify lowering on more pressure to an already, you know, pressurised young person who's facing into very important years of education as well too.
Now, last week as well, during the course of the week, Liam, we got a lot of queries about the errors that people make either before or during job interviews, and people were wondering, could you run through a list of perhaps the most popular, if I can put it like that?
Yeah, well, here are some. Dressing too casually is a very regular mistake. People say, oh, the job I'm going for won't involve me wearing a suit and tie every day, for example. In the case of a male, it may not, but the interview is a formal occasion. So you never regret putting on the glad rags and dressing up, but you often regret dressing down if you make a calculation and discover, oh, I've got this some kind of wrong, you know. The one exception I'll say is you will regret turning up probably at a dinner dance in black tie if it's not a black tie affair. But by and large, dressing too casually is the more obvious one. I've rarely heard of people overdressing for interview. So even if, as I said, the job doesn't require a shirt and tie every day or a formal suit every day, you certainly should be dressing formally for the interview. The other one is close enough to that, just being too informal. You know, the interviewer is not your friend, so don't become overly familiar. Don't lapse into text talk or trash talk or anything overly kind of anecdotal like that. You should be formal, professional, without being stilted, but definitely formal and professional. Speaking about personal circumstances and other things that don't give the employer any comfort. The employer is trying to employ somebody, and if you want to give them reasons not to employ you, while you must be, you know, honest, if there are certain things you can say it, but over making it more complicated than is necessary for the employer to employ you. So, you know, for example, telling them that, you know, that childcare will be a huge issue for you. You know, it may well be a huge issue for you. Sort it out yourself in your own time. Don't make it the employer's problem during the interview. And other ones of that nature as well. Arriving late, need we say more? I think one that's an error, if you can avoid it at all, is negotiating salary in the first interview. The first interview in particular is about proving to them you're the person for the job. And unless they push you on it, I wouldn't go there. There's time enough afterwards in second interviews, follow-up emails, phone calls to do that. Getting bogged down about the salary too early will interfere with your performance, for the want of a better word. And likewise with holidays, breaks and perks. I'm not saying people should ignore these in their decision-making, but I don't feel it's for first interview in particular. That'll all resolve itself again. And, you know, sometimes people say, oh, I don't think I'm a pushover. I want them to know that I stand up for myself. And, you know, you can do all of that, but you don't need to show your teeth on the first meeting. Lack of enthusiasm, stroke passion, very, very common. I speak to HR people regularly. This is one I get all the time from HR people about graduates coming in with excellent education and apparently, you know, very able, but just not actually saying at some point, I think I'd love to work here. I think I can bring a lot to what you do here. I like how you do things, you know, kind of let me at it kind of thing. There needs to be an enthusiasm and a passion. And when working one-on-one with clients, when clients sort of go for it and show a bit of passion, without being cliched or overly, you know, contrived about it, but when they go for it and show their passion, their interview is invariably better. And then the final one I would flag to people is speaking negatively about previous employers. And how I hold my hands up here once. I did it once spectacularly in an interview. And I went, I would say, from being probably favourite to being third of three, and if there was 10 in the race, I would have gone back to 10th because I was in a bad place in terms of a previous employment at the time. A bad place sounds unduly dramatic. I wasn't in a bad place as such, but I had in my head clear about a previous employment, and I got led into a discussion about it in another interview, and I was loose and I was unconvincing, and I knew myself I was going down the tubes. You know, sort that stuff out with your friends over a pint in the bar kind of thing. Don't be bringing it up in an interview.
Now,
so they're the main ones.
Looking at it from the other side of the interview table, particularly in light of the reports last week, where as a school teacher, an assistant principal was applying for the principal's position, and she was asked by one of the interviewers, what about the homos? I don't know whether you were whether you saw that in the newspapers last week, but what happens or what do you do if you're at interview and one of the interviewers asks a question which is clearly unsettling?
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just Googling it here as we talk. Actually, I don't know how I missed that one. January is our busiest month, so sometimes I miss,
sure,
I miss some of the new things. I mean, that was it's very, just glancing at it here, a very unprofessional addition to an interview by the interview panel. But just because they have dragged it down doesn't mean you have to go down there.
Okay? Sure.
And I would say it's like being, it's like meeting somebody socially. If they want to use coarse language and be vulgar in the ways, you have a choice not to go there if you wish. So you have that choice in an interview as well. And you know, while you don't necessarily have to go head-to-head with the interview panel, you certainly don't need to perpetuate the language or even take the question on from there. You could ask them to be, well, be a bit more specific, what do you mean? I mean, you know, and in a subtle way, let them be known you're not going to go down there. I mean, it was a very, as I'm just glancing at it here, it was a bizarre thing to say, and I suppose it reflects maybe some current debates politically in the country. But in an interview overall, I mean, I don't want to go into that one too much because I haven't read it, but as I said, you always have the right not to get down and dirty. You always have the right not to get too loose. Some people are very loose in interviews. Some interview panels can be very loose, and there are a number of grounds for discrimination, for example, that an interview candidate could take. And I hear stories every now and then from people saying, you won't believe what the interview panel said. So, you know, then that would be a very extreme case, that one there. What about the homos? But you still always have the right to stay professional. And whatever way you can, I would stay there. Show poise. Just because the other guy hits you doesn't mean you have to hit him back. Show poise, I would say, as much as you can, because you would hope you'll be remembered for it. And even if you're not, do you really want to work in a job where the poise you've shown is not valued, if you know what I mean, where they're more interested in your capacity to reduce the topic to, like that question would have done there. If the interview candidate there went on and added to that whole connotation of homos and started getting, you know, smirking or dismissive or whatever, that would have gone very low, lower than the candidate clearly wanted to go.
Well, in this instance, the interviewee was very unsettled by the remark, and in fact, subsequently, the Equality Tribunal awarded her €54,000. But I'm just thinking to myself, you know, if a person were asked a question like that or another type of inappropriate question, would they be damaging themselves if they replied by saying, I find that question inappropriate and I have no intention of answering it?
It wouldn't be my first way of dealing with it. I would ask for the question to be repeated, maybe. I'd say, well, can you just be more specific or something like that?
And then right.
Let them realise that you've jarred at the question a little bit without creating a full-scale confrontation. But if it came again the same way, you know, I probably would say, yeah, well, look, that's not how I would depict that, you know. And, you know, clearly that stage the interview panel was out of control almost, you know. I don't think it would be a problem the second time, but the first time I would try and find a way of just let them discreetly know that that's not the way you're going to. You're not going to. I mean, that's a bit like the, and you know this from your legal world, you know, the question of, are you still beating your wife kind of?
Sure.
Thing, you know what I mean? How do you answer a question like that? If you answer it honestly, you are sort of validating the term homos and the whole connotation of the school and all that kind of crack. So I would probably ask for clarification, and if they kept coming at it that way, you know, I mean, there could come a time you'd say, look, I'm going to leave the room here now. I'm just not happy the way this is going, you know. And because you don't want to work there anyway after what you've seen.
Just one final point. Perhaps we might develop this again next week or the week after as to how you best approach. I know I landed you in this one now because we hadn't intended going there, but it was only in the context of what we were discussing earlier. But perhaps we can look at how best to deal with uncomfortable questions posed at interviews by the interview board.
Absolutely, we can do that next week.
Very good. We'll have to leave it there. Liam Horan, thank you as always, and we look forward to you next week at about 5:30.
Thank you very much, Aidan.